The interviews and discussions on this podcast are opinions only and not financial or investment advice. Listeners should obtain independent advice based on their own circumstances before making any financial decisions. Hello and welcome to this Stockhead podcast. I'm your host, Peter Strachan. Today, energy supplies are being revolutionised globally with rapid introduction of low emission power sources and storage solutions. Today, we're introducing a private company that aims to be part of this change. Australian Future Energy Limited holds permits over what might otherwise be considered stranded coal assets in Queensland. Here to tell us about the company and its plans is its Managing Director, Kerry Parker. Welcome, Kerry. Perhaps we can start, begin with a brief overview of your career and what has been your path so far and what attracted you to the Australian Future Energy.
Yeah, thanks, Peter, and welcome. I'm an accountant originally by training. I had about 8.5 years with KPMG in Brisbane and other parts of the world, predominantly around advisory, corporate finance style work. I left there in 1996, and since that time, other than a brief period with a small biotech company, I've been involved in mining and resources and energy projects across most of the world and across most commodities, oil, gas, coal seam gas. I spent a lot of time in the early days in Australia, gold, copper, and other renewable energy sources. Projects in Australia, US, Europe, Asia, parts of Southern Africa as well. Predominantly CEO and CFO roles in ASX listed group or large private groups. I joined AFE in March 2017, so just over 4 years ago. With attracted by the real difference that the technology and AFE's projects can make to a low carbon future.
Kerry, you've spent a lot of time in Africa looking at your CV and working with many new technologies and project development opportunities there. What lessons have you taken from that experience and how will that be applied, do you think, to assist Australian Future Energy with its projects here in Australia?
I think you've got to have clear faith and clear belief in the technology that you've got as the cornerstone of any of those projects. And I think we certainly got that with AFE with our gasification technology, which is commercially proven at commercial scale. You've seen a lot of projects and technologies around the world that are small scale, not fully developed. This is a fully developed technology that's been proven at commercial scale in various locations throughout Asia. We spent a lot of time in the middle of 2017 going through each of those operating plants in detail. The largest is producing about 400,000 tonnes per annum of methanol very successfully. So it's not bench scale. So I think that's the key foundation. And the other one is having developed markets for what you're going to produce. Now, a lot of projects you see over the time will be a great concept on paper, but there's no offtake arrangements, which for us was key, that whatever we produced, we had to be able to sell. And with our project at the moment, we've got basically 100% of our production under long-term offtake arrangements.
Yeah. So Australian Future Energy holds, as you said, this exclusive global rights to the Gas Technology Institute's gasification technology, excluding China, and this is your foundation asset. How is this technology different to that 100-year-old coal gasification technology that, when I was a kid, we had coal in Victoria. Gas in Victoria all came from the gasification of coal before they piped in gas from the Gippsland Basin. So what does this technology bring to the table?
It brings a couple of unique advantages. And there are, as you correctly pointed out, there are a number of competing gasification technology across the world. The key aspect for this is, and the key differentiator for this technology is that it operates very well and very efficiently on lower quality high ash coal. So we can effectively take waste coal or coal that would otherwise be returned to the pit as waste and utilise that as the feedstock. gives us two distinct advantages, one being, you know, a very high availability of coal of that nature. Most operating coal mines have coal of that nature that's returned to the pit as waste. So we've got a very strong availability of coal, but we've also got a distinct cost of production advantage in that we're not relying on export quality coal as our feedstock. So that's the key attribute. And I guess from a technological point of view, all of our CO2 emissions are captured on a pre-combustion basis. So they're not emitted, they're all captured. And by virtue of it being pre-combustion, a very high purity nature, somewhere between 96 and 98% purity. So in the world that we are today, we recognise that we can't build a project like that unless we can do something with the CO2 emissions. And over the last 18 months, we've spent a lot of time developing markets for that CO2. So turning around the concept of CO2 being a problem to CO2 being a valuable product. We'll take about a third of our emissions and they'll be sold in. We've got a heads of agreement in place for those. They're to be sold into the food grade market, so the 98% type purity level. You know, traditionally that CO2 has been used for carbonated beverages, beers and soft drinks and that, but increasingly being used across the world for food transport and food distribution. The CO2 food grade market in Asia, for example, at the moment is somewhere between $9 and $10 billion US per annum and growing at about 6 to 7% annually. So we see a huge market, expanding market for that. And Gladstone, you know, being virtually on the doorstep of Asia in terms of accessing those markets. The second two-thirds of the CO2 will go into an advanced manufacturing project, which likely to be co-located on our site, which will take CO2, mix it with a variety of minerals to create building products. So all of it's captured and all of it, you know, ending up in a very clean process.
So that brings us to the projects that you're working on, the three main projects that AFE has sort of in pre-feasibility and feasibility studies. Can you just run us through those projects, please, Kerry?
Yeah, sure. The most advanced of those and the one we've been working on the last 3 years or so is our Gladstone Energy and Ammonia project, a blue hydrogen project. Ammonia being recognised and increasingly recognised around the world at the moment as being one of, and if not the most efficient methods to transport hydrogen. So we have about 230,000 tonnes per annum of ammonia and about 14 petajoules of gas as our produced product. To put that in perspective, that's about 91,000 tonnes per annum of hydrogen. So a significantly scaled up project. So the number of green hydrogen projects being proposed around Australia at the moment, but most of those are in that sort of 500 to 5,000 tonne per annum capacity. Ours will be at 91,000 tonnes per annum, probably larger than all of those smaller green ones put together.
And the green hydrogen projects need a lot of green electricity, which hasn't yet been built. So there's a...
That's right. And also with our Gladstone project, a distinctive cost of production advantage over the green hydrogen projects at the moment. Our hydrogen will be produced at around $1.50 per kilo, and over time we'll get that down to about $1.20 per kilo.
So that's below the magical sort of $2.
Yeah, well below. So we're getting to scale quickly, and we're getting at a, you know, very good cost of production off our first project. The green projects at the moment, the ones we're seeing, are producing at anywhere between probably US dollars, $6 to $8 per kilo. And our view is that they'll get down to about $3 to $4 per kilo over time. So for us, you know, the blue hydrogen space we're in, we see it as being vital for the sector, not only in the medium term, but also the longer term, to meet what we see as the demand that's going to be there.
Yeah, and so Woodside's looking at ammonia as a product to transport hydrogen as well.
Yeah, and yes, that's correct. And increasingly being, in terms of the marine and shipping industry, increasingly being viewed as the best cleaner fuel for that industry as well.
And so where does the fuel source come from for that? You know, you're going to base it in Gladstone?
Yeah, we've got two coal sources we're looking at the moment, both within probably 150 kilometres proximity to Gladstone. And that was one of the reasons we chose Gladstone as the site of our first project, in that we're close to a number of operating coal mines that are already in that area coming in off differing rail lines, so that we've got, as a risk management strategy, we've got coal coming in from varying sources.
Yeah, it's an industrial hub with the port and so forth.
Oh, when we decided on Gladstone about 3 years ago, it was for those reasons. We've got a community that's understanding and proud that they are an industrial town. We've got a great workforce. We've got an excellent deep water port. We've got coal supply. We've got a great land site that we acquired from the Queensland Government in 2018. We've got direct rail access with it. We've got mains power at the boundary of the property, gas pipeline at the boundary. It's very well located.
Yeah, so can we skip over to the other two projects, Kerry?
Yes, the other two are earlier stage, are in more in pre-feasibility stage. The first one being our proposed Pentland Hydrogen Hub. Pentland's located about 230 kilometres southwest of Townsville, directly on the railway line, directly under mains power. And we're looking at that longer term as probably the second stage project for AFE, which will look at a combination of either ammonia and methanol or some variation thereof. For export purposes through the Port of Townsville. The Surat Basin Hydrogen Hub we're also looking at, again, in the pre-feasibility stage, utilising local coal sources within that area. It's a large coal province, and targeting the CO2 that will be produced from that project into a number of enhanced oil recovery projects that are proposed for that region. So, again, closing the loop, making sure we're dealing with the emissions in a responsible way.
So, Kerry, these types of industrial bits of kit, if you like, don't come cheaply. What sort of capital costs are involved in each of these projects, and where will AFE look to source its funding? Will you be, looking to bring in a joint venture partner? Will you go to the equity and debt markets, look for offtake agreements which you can partner with, that sort of thing?
Yeah, look, the total capex is not small. If you look at the Gladstone project, the capital's development capital's approximately $1 billion Aussie, so it's not small. We've spent a lot of time in the last 18 months around the debt side of things, and we've got a construction finance facility term sheet in place for a $650 million US facility, which will anchor the bulk of the debt. We've had strong support from the Northern Australia Infrastructure Facility towards a loan facility for the project. And we qualify under NAIF given our location in Gladstone. So that's well progressed. We're working with a number of offshore strategic partners at the moment around direct investment into the project and into AFE. So that will be one source of the equity. We've obviously got fairly solid off-takers in place already around the ammonia and the gas off-take that we'll look to tap for some of the equity as well. Ultimately, it's going to involve some entry into the public markets at some stage through a listing either here or elsewhere, once we get further along with the project.
And, Kerry, how many are on the team there at Australian Future Energy, and who are the major shareholders there now?
We've got a team of about core team of about 12 of a group, mix of technical, commercial, finance skills, and we've got a number of other key consultants, probably another 10 or a dozen key consultants that we draw on over time or as we need. I should also add that we've also had one of the key decisions we made in 2018 was to bring one of the large EPC groups, SNC-Lavalin, on board with us. And they've been our engineering partner for the last nearly 3 years, doing a lot of that work at their own cost of risk, which has been terrific for us from a validation perspective that we've all of our pre-feasibility studies and other detailed engineering studies have hasn't been just AFE telling the story. We've had someone with the power and the caliber of SNC-Lavalin behind us. So that's been terrific. We've got two major shareholders. They're both the foundation shareholders, one with about 40%, the other with about 30%. And the rest of the core team, we've probably got about somewhere between 20 and 25% amongst the rest of the core team. So it's pretty tightly held at the moment. And that's the way we've progressed today.
So who are those? Who are the 40 and 30% shareholders? Are they represented by the chair or?
Yeah, the Eric Koroz, who is one of the two founders of AFE, he and his personal investment companies hold about 40%. Another group out of the US, Synthesis Energy Systems, holds about 30%.
Okay, and there was some move there to rationalise that corporate structure with Synthesis in the past.
Yeah, we looked at a merger with SES about 18 months ago. For a variety of reasons around the timing, that didn't work. SES continues to be a very supportive shareholder of AFE and you know, believes in the long-term journey that we're in or that we're on. They've been a great shareholder over the years.
So does SES hold the license to this gasification technology or is it held in the AFE structure itself?
It was originally held by SES, but in the middle of last year, third quarter of last year, AFE licensed the technology directly from GTI.
Okay. Well, Kerry, that's a really big story. Thanks for coming in today and taking the time to update Stockhead subscribers. AFE certainly has some big plans and Stockhead will be keenly watching as each of the feasibility studies comes to their conclusion and you're able to progress with the funding side of the business and put in place all the building blocks that you need to make it all happen. So thanks once again for coming in and telling us all about it.
Thanks for allowing me the opportunity. I appreciate it.